This is a production of Cornell University.
Hello and welcome to the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, your weekly connection to turfgrass information, brought to you in partnership with the New York State Turfgrass Association, the Turfgrass Environmental Stewardship Fund, and your Cornell University Turfgrass Science Program. My name is Frank Rossi. I'm the Turf Extension Specialist here at Cornell University, and the following are observations and recommendations for the week of May 19th, 2014. The surge of warm weather last week has allowed many to catch up on growing degree day totals. While most are at or close to normal, it still feels slightly behind. But there's no denying the spring growth surge is underway. At the same time, we're beginning to see the first signs of crabgrass germination and widespread clover infestations. Also, many have commented on the increased annual bluegrass populations this spring, as evidenced by the prolific seeding associated with the true winter annual type. This is likely the result of cool, wet weather for much of the season last year, especially in the summer in much of the region, at least until fall. Golf superintendents are beginning to get a look at the effectiveness of their seed head suppression programs, and as usual, there is wide variability. No patterns have emerged yet, and most should have summer patch programs in place and be addressing brown ring patch issues. Our forecast information with regard to weather last week said it was a warm week with most about 5 to 7 degrees above normal. The warmest areas are western New York. The Great Lakes shoreline remains well behind normal on a growing degree day basis. However, the rest of the region is within a few days of last year as well as the 15-year average. Dandelion control with the ester formulation is ideal for much of the region now, but keep in mind this formulation is also the most prone to vapor drift problems. Soils are in the low 50s to the upper 60s across the region. From a moisture perspective, it was a fairly dry week last week between a half and 1 inch of rainfall. Upstate New York had 1 to 2 inch totals, especially central New York. ET was less than a quarter inch on Long Island and between 3/4 to 1 inch for the rest of the region. Now, for the upcoming week, a warm and wet pattern is setting up for most of the region for the early part of the week. Expect high foliar disease pressure, including brown ring patch. By midweek, expect the cooling trend to begin, keeping us 3 to 4 degrees below normal. Highs in the 70s and lows down to the 40s and upper 30s, but no frost. A normal temperature pattern is setting up, however, expect above normal temperatures in the long term. And, of course, you can check out all the weather maps and predictions at our forecast website that you can access through our Cornell University Turfgrass Science website. The Cooperative Extension update comes from the Cornell University Cooperative Extension, as well as in partnership with Rutgers Cooperative Extension and our pal at the Diagnostic Lab at Rutgers, Rich Buckley. First of all, from Jerry Giordano, a little comment about soils and weeds. Grass is growing vigorously under cool temperatures and regular rainfall with red thread reported in a few locations. A bumper crop of clover has been observed in the field and reported by landscapers. And homeowners along with corn speedwell and dandelion completing the puffball stage. Broadleaf plantain's tolerance of compacted wet soils was borne out as it proliferated in a weakened lawn built on top of a clay tennis court. This extreme case illustrates the need to address subsurface compaction to improve turf's ability to compete. One athletic field manager reported amazement at no need for first irrigation even at mid-May and expressed concern that shallow rooting now due to high moisture may lead to issues when weather heats up. Our own Dave Chinnery and our pal Rich Buckley made a note here about evergreen damage. Widespread damage has been reported across the Northeast U.S. regarding winter damage to evergreens. Some of this damage is clearly related to the very cold temperatures, but also that the dry fall may have set the plants up for desiccation as a result of the high winds experienced this winter. In addition to the winter damage, many evergreens are also struggling with Swiss needleclass and rab decline. A close look, use a hand lens, at the undersides of needles on suspect trees will reveal lesions that are erupting with fungal fruiting bodies. Preventative fungicide treatments before wet weather to protect the succulent new growth are the best or only way to control needle casts in production fields. Remember, good coverage, top to bottom and side to side, is essential. Another annual bluegrass weevil update from Pat Vidham's UMass Landscape Update. The dogwoods were here were at peak bloom or slightly past that. Lilacs are blooming here in the Pioneer Valley, and all kinds of things are changing quickly. That means if you are in the area similar to what I have just described and are planning to use chlorantraniliprole or acelaprin against annual bluegrass weevil, now would be a good time to make that application. Any time in the next 7 to 10 days should work very well for you. Last week, May 13th, we found small larvae and samples sent to us from two golf courses in Westchester County, about 75% instars, second instars, and 25% third instars. So those of you in the more southern reaches of our listening area should start looking for damage in the usual places. Monitor for larval activity. Fourth and fifth instars will be feeding near the crowns of the plant and are certainly large enough to see without a hand lens. We'll be getting a new round of samples in from the Weevil Track Project on Tuesday, and we'll continue to provide a quick update once we have those numbers. Start watching for rhododendron activity. While ours are not close to opening yet, my guess is that some of you in the metropolitan area are seeing rhododendron catawbans beginning to bloom. That is an excellent indicator for when to apply a larvicide, a product that targets larvae. The three most common choices are indoxacarb, spinosad, and triclifon. My gazing in the grass update starts with a note about carbon neutral golf. Scientists at Colorado State University are collaborating with the USDA to evaluate the carbon footprint of golf courses. A survey of 17 golf course facilities is evaluating the fuel, electricity, and natural gas used over the last 3 years. The preliminary results suggest that clubhouse and golf cart electricity use was the greatest energy consumption associated with Colorado golf course operations. Researchers at Colorado State University have measured changes in greenhouse gases such as nitrous oxide, methane, and carbon dioxide from golf course fairways, rough, native areas, and putting greens. Nitrous oxide emissions were greatest from fairway collection sites, and of the fertilizer tested, Polyon had the lowest loss compared to BCMU and UMAX. Nitrous oxide emissions from the putting green and native sites were only about 10% of the emissions from fairways. The researchers also applied the DASENT model to turf grass systems to best test best management practices for Kentucky bluegrass rough. For semi-arid regions such as Colorado, the model predicts a 50% reduction in nitrous oxide emissions when irrigation decreases from replacing 100% to 60%. The model simulation also suggests that gradually reducing nitrogen fertilization as turf stand ages from 0 to 50 years would reduce long-term nitrous oxide emissions by 40%. The simulation indicates that the efficient use of resources such as water and fertilizers can have a dramatic effect on the emissions of greenhouse gases from golf course turf. And for more information, you can go to the website that the United States Golf Association has put up with regard to this study. And finally, a note about brown ring patch. Brown ring patch is also known as Whitea patch and is caused by the fungus Rhizoctonia circinata. The disease causes diffuse yellow rings with scalloped edges on putting greens and tees. Yellow patch, which has its own alias, cool season brown patch, is caused by Rhizoctonia cerealis. Yellow patch is more of a late winter disease than a spring disease. Brown ring patch is very similar to yellow patch in initial appearance, but has a higher temperature threshold and does a little bit more damage. It will persist into early summer, and if left untreated, may cause some death of the turf. Brown ring patch will also degrade thatch, which might interfere with ball roll on a putting green. Interestingly enough, the yellow rings caused by brown ring patch are dynamic and over time appear to float around the turf. Dakinil, Chipco, Endorse, or Affirm, Heritage, Insignia, Medallion, ProStar, Triton, and Trinity have provided good control when used on a curative basis applied on a 14-day interval. But this disease is most effectively suppressed when fungicides are applied on a preventative basis. Multiple applications may be needed once symptoms develop, and fungicides must be applied in sufficient water to ensure good penetration into the crown and thatch. For example, at least 2 gallons of water per thousand at 30 to 40 PSI. Once infections are arrested with fungicides, symptoms may take 14 to 28 days or more to recover. It is important to note that brown ring patch is not controlled by benzimidazole fungicides. Thank you for joining me for the May 19, 2004 installment of the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, brought to you in partnership with the New York State Turfgrass Association, the Turfgrass Environmental Stewardship Fund, and your Cornell University's Turfgrass Science Program. I'm Frank Rossi. I'm the Turf Extension Specialist here at Cornell University in the Department of Horticulture, and I hope you have a great week.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.